Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky Tunes.
Hello, and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm your host, Darren Bresnitz. Today, I sit down with Shin Irvin, the creative partner at Shin's Pizza, and Chef Melissa Lopez, the chef and partner at Shin's Pizza. And we are recording on a Friday, which means it's pizza night in America. And we dive into that delicious topic and more with them. We talk about Shin growing up in Philly, how Melissa and him came together to create a beautiful personal pizza shop in Cypress Park, and the type of art and the music that you can expect when you go grab a slice. And then it's deep into the archives, and we had Alex Rose before she became Canyon Counterpoint doing a performance, playing some incredible songs from her then released debut album, Accordion Pages. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on Heritage Radio Network.
Business. Oh, touch me, I am sick. I am strong. I am lustful in this abyss. I am neither formed, I am not full. I'm a great divide. All is amiss. So kiss me, baby. Tell me, Judas, are you my priest? Kiss me, baby, while I'm wild and free. And tell me, Judas, are you my priest? Open my mouth to impurities. Open my throat, let in the bees, so they can buzz and busy me. And kiss me, baby, while I'm wild and free. And tell me, Judas, are you my priest? Just kiss me, baby. Kiss me, baby. Kiss me, baby, while I'm wild and free.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm so excited to be sitting down with Shin Irvin and Melissa Lopez of Shin's Pizza LA's, one of LA's newest additions to the pizza pantheon of the city. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for having us.
You know, Shin, you and I both grew up in Philly, and I don't know if people really think of it as a pizza town, but it's where I had my first slices, you know, especially down on South Street, Lorenzo and Sons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is, you know, a legendary, but I don't know if it's legendary outside the city. Where did you eat pizza growing up, and what do you love about the city's take on the cuisine?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I grew up with a pizzeria that was very close to me. It was almost like 2 blocks away. for me, it was more of a place to hang out.
Mm.
They had like video games. And, you know, we would go in there after school and like order some fries and things like that. And like share like one tub of fries with like tons of ketchup on it.
Yeah.
And then we would play video games. And it was just it was like home base.
Yeah.
And I think the pizza in Philly, the way I felt it was a bit different was that most of the pizza in Philly were run by, I feel like, more Greeks than Italians.
Mm.
And I think Greeks have a different take on the Philly style foods, even the hoagies,
sure.
Salads and everything was slightly different from the Italians. Well,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I remember like a more buttery crust. I remember feta and peppers and olives in my salad. It's something that when you just grow up, especially when you're younger, you're like, well, this is just what pizza is. Especially, I mean, you're a little older than I am, but like, you know, when you grow up, you're like, my pizza is defined as the pizza within my hometown.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, Melissa, you grew up in Nogales, Arizona. What was your relationship with pizza growing up? Because, you know, I know that pizza's been put on the map a little bit in Arizona, but, you know, what was it like when you were a kid?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, like, growing up in Arizona, like, now and even when I was younger, it was like, you know, Pizzeria Bianco, and that was like the end-all, be-all of any good pizza. Yep. I didn't have that until I was much older. I think my relationship with pizza was this place on Morley Avenue called Vesuvio's Pizza. And the one thing I remember about it was like a braided crust. That was all. I mean, you know, you obviously had like Domino's and Pizza Hut, but Vesuvio's was like the only local pizza shop with the braided crust. They had huge slices. And I remember it being really good. Although, now, if I think back on it, it was probably only good because it was a mom and pop kind of run pizza shop.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, there's that ritual. I mean, it's all good, right? But it's a part about the, you get the family together. It's like usually Friday night. I know, Shin, that was a big part of you growing up with you and your mom. Was that like, let's get pizza, let's hang out, let's be a family together around like a slice?
Yeah, because I was a latchkey kid, so I would have to kind of take care of myself. So like the only time we really like had time was on Fridays and like on weekends. So my mom really liked to eat out and try different kinds of cuisines, but Friday was always kind of designated to just like, let's get a pizza, let's stay home, let's just like, you know, have some one-on-one time. Between my mom and I. So I really cherish it because it's just, you know, I don't think people realize like those kinds of times are like, it's kind of rare in today's society. You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't happen often because people are so busy with their lives, you know?
No, I hear you. And it's, you know, I live in this part of LA called Altadena, and we've had two great pizza spots open up in the last couple of years. And it's amazing how much myself and my family have gravitated back to pizza night. More than anything else is like, let's get some pizza, let's hang out, let's be family together. It's so special. Is that something you guys, either of you still practice today with your families?
I think for me, it's more of a Sunday night kind of dinner now. I have a 2-year-old daughter who, you know, she eats very early, but on Sunday we definitely make it a point to go out to dinner early, you know, try different restaurants. I live on the west side of LA, so, you know, try different restaurants out there. But pizza night for me too, growing up, was always on Friday nights. And, you know, I don't think I've ever, until I opened up the pizza shop and started working with Shin more closely and his relationship to Friday night pizza with his mom, I don't think I realized how much of a staple that was in my life growing up until I was talking to Shin about it. And, you know, and yeah, I think Shin's really right about the lack of kind of time that you set aside for that nowadays. And it's a really special thing. And to have a pizza shop where Friday is definitely our busiest night, and to be able to try to recreate that for families in Cypress Park and adjoining neighborhoods is a really special thing when you really take the time to think about it.
Yeah. Also, I think now that I am a parent that works, I can understand by Friday night, I'm like, if I have to cook another meal or make another,
exactly.
I'm like, can we just order something and something totally. That the kids are going to eat. Now, I want to get to Shin's in a little bit, but, you know, Melissa, you referenced Pizzeria Bianco, and, you know, this radio network is set in the shipping container back of Roberta's. Uh-huh. And so obviously pizza and the idea of like what you can do is, I don't know if fine dining, but like prestige restaurants with pizza has obviously shifted now over the years. And that's definitely a way in. But when you were coming up, and I'm going to use your words, not mine, you sure. worked in intense kitchens in New York and Los Angeles. What brought you into the restaurant world, and when did you start to think about different type of restaurants that you would want to be a part of?
It's like a really good question. I think I was drawn to cooking when I went on a tour at the French Culinary Institute when I was looking at culinary schools. Cause I went to college. I got a degree cause it was kind of like what you had to do in my family. And it felt like it was just checking a box, mm-hmm. but there wasn't really any passion behind what I studied. I studied journalism.
Sure.
No offense to you or any journalists out there, but it just wasn't necessary for me.
And I
started touring culinary schools, and I always wanted to live in New York City. And this was just like an avenue for mm-hmm. me. So mm-hmm. I walked into the school and I smelled freshly baked baguettes, and I was sold. I was like, this is what I want to do. And, you know, I went to culinary school there.
They just pump it right into the foyer for everyone,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. It's like a Subway, but a better version of it. And that was it. I was like hooked, and you know, school was very foreign to me. They spoke French. I had no idea what they were saying most of the time. And I remember being very overwhelmed, but always like, but very challenged and like understanding that like, it was a good, uncomfortable feeling that I was, you know, going through every couple of days when I was going to school. And I was very lucky to get a job in a kitchen in New York. I was working pastry, which I was terrible at. And that really set the foundation for this idea of working in a place where you're kind of uncomfortable, but you're getting through the day and like pushing yourself to get better and to understand how you could get better. And I think that, you know, I don't think that there are a lot of industries that kind of make you do that on a regular basis.
Yeah. Now, Shin, your entry into the restaurant world was through design. But before you started designing restaurants, you were in the music world, working for different labels and things like that. What did you take from that design experience, and how did you apply it to more spatial design and restaurant design?
Yeah, I mean, I was living in New York at the time when I first got my introduction to a record company, which was Motown Records.
Mm.
And, you know, I was just thrown into it because I had no idea what I was doing or what I was getting into. But it's a fun atmosphere when there's creativity with people who are creating sounds and music, and you know, you have an office with your own stereo in it, and like as loud as you want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, mm-hmm. we used to pump it where the office was like, because me and my buddy shared another colleague, David Harley. We shared an office together, and he used to love playing like, you know, like music super loud, and I wasn't used to it, but then I realized that you start to hear more if you play it loud. And through that process and working for a record company, obviously you get to party a lot, you get to, you know, be introduced to all kinds of things. And I think through that process, I started to get into restaurants and food, because we would work late, and then in New York it's great because you can mm-hmm. go out anytime. So afterwards, we would, you know, just seek out different restaurants. And I remember actually sitting in Leal, Bourdain's restaurant,
yeah,
at the time, with my friends Jameson and Jennifer. And like, we'd be sitting there at the end of the night, and then, you know, this guy comes in and sits down and starts smoking cigarettes in front, because they were friends with Jameson and Jennifer. And we would just talk about the night. And I just found that really, like, to me, it felt very romantic.
Yes.
The whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved the feeling of it. And I was just a fan at first. And then I guess once when I got to LA, I got my first opportunity to do a restaurant brand, which was called Jelena. At the time.
Yeah, I mean, arguably now, one of the most famous restaurant and restaurant brands, if not in LA, if in America.
Yeah, for sure. That is an iconic, iconic
brand. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the time, I was just surfing and, you know, and like freelancing, and I was just been through a divorce, and like, I was just trying to like recover. And then this thing shows up, and like, they told me I was had a contest with somebody from New York, and I was like, you have 2 days to do it. And I'm like, oh. And it was just one of those things. I just did it. I did three concepts. I sat with Travis and his partner, and like, they just, Travis just gravitated to this one design.
But sometimes it's just not, I don't want to say not knowing, but just being put into these constraints of either time or just being open to what is out there in the world and the influence. And sometimes that's the best work. It's just it's so pure in some ways.
Yes, that's exactly it. And I you know, respect to all the people who design out there and stuff.
Of course, it's really hard.
But I just feel like now it's almost like they take too much time. They take, you know, like they consider so many different things that it becomes robotic.
Right. No, I hear you. And I think maybe the same can be said about restaurants and cooking and things like that, where it's just like you're under so much scrutiny and you have so many influences at hand that like it just feels formulaic at a point. All right, let's take a quick musical break. And when we come back, I want to talk about getting Shin's open, how you two met, and some of the music that is played at the shop. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Red's got her hood, she's running through the forest. Run faster, she's got a lot for us. She can't go home too quick. Wolf's hungry, he hasn't eaten all day. Follow her, she's getting away. She knows she's got no time to waste. Duh, she's in the forest. Duh, she's coming for us. Jack the quick, climb up your green candlestick. You're running out, but he's too slick. Jack's got your things, he's robbed your house, but you're too slow and he's gotten out. That giant's got one big bone to pick. Forest and die. coming for us. Whoa, she's too grim. Up in your hill, don't waste your time. No, don't stand still. I'm falling fast. I can't stand up. We're two, but soon we could be one. And mom and dad don't want us home. And Jill, she's stuck inside a hole. Jack, he's really down on his luck. And
welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm sitting down with Shin Irvin, creative partner at Shin's Pizza, and Chef Melissa Lopez, the chef and partner at Shin's Pizza. And before the break, we're talking about design and being open to this creative flow of when thinking about doing a new design or cooking new food. And Shin, you talked about not wanting to get in the way of food, but that the details and all the little touches do add up to the total experience. How do you find that balance to create an identity and give something its own visual language, but not be too overwrought to the point where it just feels that it's a mess?
Yeah, I mean, I that's a really good question. I really love that question. Because essentially that's how kind of I approach creativity and how design can interact with whatever it is, whether it's a beer company or it's a restaurant. For me, I always felt like my job was to, everyone I meet is highly creative and, you know, talented, and they have their own views on things. And for me, my job is to kind of like take that element and translate it so that it can translate in a visual way without like screaming at you. I mean, yes, right, there are certain designs and things that will scream at you, but there's a purpose for that. And for instance, like working with someone like Travis Lett, he is very particular. He has a, you know, he has his own vision about what the world should look like and what his food should feel like and taste like. And my job is to kind of support that. It isn't to stand out. It isn't to like, hey, look at me, you know, like I'd rather be the guy in the background. And that's kind of how I approach every project.
I love that. And Melissa, similar question to you. How do you make sure that the food is telling a story and represents a restaurant, but doesn't get in the way of being too complicated or too fussy?
Yeah, I think I've been very lucky to work with chefs and mentors who have kind of always preached that less is more. You can like build a dish and build layers of flavor and you know, seasoned throughout and all those very basic things. And I think that pizza is like the epitome of that. Like, you have to be able to have a very solid foundation of dough and sauce and cheese and then build upon that. And even with the sides that we're doing, which is not typical of a pizza shop, to kind of cook sides to order and to build flavor in, you know, a small little to-go container is not necessarily the easiest thing, but you have to be able to kind of push the limits and decide that, you know, adding one extra thing or not adding that thing is going to make that dish memorable, you know. And that's kind of my goal, is to, when I'm testing something, to test it 15, 20, 30 times to make sure that, like, when people take a bite of that, then they're going to remember those flavors and that combination of ingredients. And I think that's a really, really cool thing to be able to do that with food.
Yeah, it's that balance to create craveability and a wanting to return, which is so much about what a pizza shop is about, like, this is our spot. This is our place that we go as a family, or I go on, you know, my lunch break. Shin, when did you first get the idea that you wanted to open up a pizza shop? When was designing restaurants for others no longer enough to scratch that creative itch?
I think it really started, like, for me, like, when I was in Costa Rica around 2016. You know, at the time I was doing, I believe I was starting on the Line Hotel.
With Roy?
Yeah, with Roy. And I started to get into the weeds, and, like, I got really excited, you know, because like, you had all these touch points and, like, right. You'd have so much influence and, like, fun with it. And then, you know, I realized, like, this is something I would like to do if I could just, like, if I had money and I just would do it myself.
Right.
And I thought, like, well, maybe I can be also a smart business guy. Maybe I can get somebody that can help me support that.
Yeah.
So
find someone else's money to help support that.
So... Exactly. But, you know, also he's my ex-business partner, but Rudy Majias, he was my partner at Folklore for, I don't know how long, probably about 10 years now. And we actually, in the very early beginning, we opened a hotel together in Malibu. It was called a Native. Now I believe it's called Hotel June. And I guess I always had that desire in me to do that. And we had a couple other attempts. You know, we were going to do a ramen shop at one point.
Sure.
But to me, you know, it was all a learning thing, because it was like, I'm back in school and, you know, it's trial and error and see what happens. Just stick my neck out there and see what will happen and learn from it. And that's kind of how I approached it. And for Shins, unfortunately, this came to be because the pandemic happened, and my mother happened to pass away, not from the pandemic, but...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, during that time. And then I just kept thinking about her, and I kept thinking about those Friday nights. My heart was telling me, like, you should open a pizza shop. And I was like, if I'm going to do that, I'm going to need the right partner.
Yes.
So we looked, I met Adam a long time ago, and then met Holly afterwards, and then I really respected what they were doing in the culinary world and operations world, and, like, just the vibe of everything they were producing. And I got along with them, you know? So I thought it would be a great idea just to partner up. And lucky for me, they agreed. And they found Melissa, which is even more amazing to me because Melissa, you know, her temperament and her, like, she's always happy, you know? No, she is. I mean, I don't know anyone happier than Melissa.
I mean, that is a good quality in this industry.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And she reminded me of my mother, like, in spirit. And it just felt like it all just fit.
I mean, that's so beautiful. I mean, you know, the great thing I think that Adam and Holly and everyone at Last Word Hospitality does is building these restaurants around a personal story, around the right team. And you see it with like Found Oyster and Queen Street, among their other places as well. Melissa, no pressure to take Shin's childhood memories with his mother and turn that into a reality with food. And have an iconic new pizza shop open up. What was the process for you there?
You know, it's funny that, you know, I think about Shin and his story, like, sorry, I get a little emotional when I think about it.
Oh, man.
I think it's just because it's such an honor to have that, like, to do that for somebody, but it's also what he does for me, you know, and for the people that work there. And he has a photo of his mother and his grandmother, like, right as you walk into the kitchen. And I, like, every time I walk in there, I think about, like, honoring that memory. And it's kind of, it's a huge responsibility that I don't take lightly, obviously. But, you know, Shin is, he would give you the clothes off his back. He would feed you till you are so full you could not eat for weeks. Like, that's the type of person he is. And, you know, to be able to work with somebody like that and have that same, you know, drive to do good and to honor somebody's memories, like, you know, you don't get that at every restaurant that you work with. You don't get to work with people who care and who want to do it for, like, a bigger reason. And, you know, I try every day to think about that and to honor that memory of his mother. And, you know, and then people in my life too that have helped me to become who I am. And I don't know, I think it's a really sweet thing.
I mean, it's so sweet and it's so beautiful. And it does feel so personal. And I think that is the beauty of something like pizza. And you said it before, it can seem so simple, even the whole space itself, but it really is a powerful thing because it is not this is our anniversary meal. This is not the, you know, we're going out to celebrate. This is like the workhorse of a restaurant that becomes the part of the fabric of a family's life. And to be able to pass that story through this food is, and you know, you're somehow then creating those memories for someone, saying like, this is where we did our pizza on a Friday night. And it's inspired by where I did my pizza on a Friday night. And it's just, it is a responsibility, but it's such a beautiful one to have.
Yeah. And I don't think people like take the time to think about it as much anymore, you know, and it's that same idea that like people aren't sitting down for dinner every night with their family. And, you know, to be able to like do that hopefully once a week for people, then that's a big deal for me.
I think so too. I think to be a regular anywhere these days is a lot, and to be this like, well, I'm going to see these families every week. Just they become a part of your life too.
Yeah.
And, you know, touching on the personality of it, it's like you walk in and it just does feel like you've entered into someone's space that's lived in. And I think part of it, that is the way it's designed and the art that's on the wall and the music that's playing. Can you talk a little bit about like what into those elements of the space?
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to recover from Melissa.
No, I know.
Right.
Take your time. Take your time. Of course.
That was beautiful. Thank you.
Well, you know that I love you, Shin, and I'm gonna start crying again. But you know, we probably don't need to do this here. But you know that I love you.
Yeah, I couldn't have asked for a better human being.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, design.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to like try and move it along, but I want to give you the space to talk to each other and then also to answer the question. So take whatever time you need, of course.
Yeah. I mean, for us, you know, it was to me a group effort. It wasn't just like I had ideas, but obviously Adam and Holly know what they're doing. So
of course,
We talked about this sort of like place where it just opens up to the street because we have such a beautiful wide sidewalk and a tree. And we wanted that kind of LA aspect of it to differentiate it from like the East Coast style pizzerias. So first thing was we needed to open that window and put a counter. And then the second thing we wanted was important was to see into the kitchen. That's why there's this big window where you can see the people behind the scenes. Just
so much fun.
You know? Yeah. It's like a, you know, like a live television kind of.
Yeah.
See it. And, as far as aesthetics and things, you know, memories of East Coast style, little places, even places in Tokyo, to me, like these little places, the little gems. So I just took the elements that I liked, you know, I liked the color green. You'll see that in a lot of the branding these days too, that we do. A lot of the stuff is green. I admit it, but. and then I wanted to include some artwork and people that I've worked with in the past and the things that I've discovered in flea markets and just, you know, my love of the ocean and surfing and those kinds of aspects and put it all together. And also allow room for growth so that, you know, different, because I remember in Philly at Jim Steaks.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorites. You would stand up and eat a steak sandwich downstairs. And there was a signature wall of all the people that came through Jim Steaks. And everything in black and white and some in color and just covered the whole wall. And I always remember that, and I always felt like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, it's like a growing wall. And that was the idea behind it. And the music is just stuff I like, that I listen to, that I put together. It isn't more than that. And I included some more soulful Philly, you know, artists. Because, you know, that's kind of where I grew up and listened to, you know, the types of music, which was more soul. So, yeah, just a little chill place to have a slice and like hang out and like look at the wall and get entertained for a second.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like a little bit of a respite from LA of just swinging in. Good music, good slice, low pressure.
Yeah.
I would like to ask about one of the slices before we go, because I do believe that the mortadella slice really does signify so much about what the spot is about. And Melissa, I had asked you the story behind that slice when I ate there, but I'd love for you to share how it came to be and how it's become such a visually iconic part of the culinary landscape in town.
Yeah, I think when you start developing recipes and you kind of have always a vision of what it's going to be, and most of the time it doesn't necessarily end up that way. I knew I wanted to have a white pie on the menu. And, you know, when I was R&Ding, I was talking to Adam about just obviously like pizza. And he was telling me when he went to Rome, he had this pizza that was just had a ton of sliced mortadella on it. And I was like, oh, maybe that's going to be my white pie. And there was obviously different variations of it. And when I had the idea of putting the ricotta on the bottom of the pie, baking it, and then just putting the mortadella on top. And the ricotta got like chalky, and it was like not the right texture or flavor that I was looking for. So then I just put mozzarella with garlic and olive oil and made the base much more simple. And I knew I wanted the elements of the ricotta, just the creaminess of that on the pie, and then just putting the sliced mortadella on top. And what I love about that slice is that it's the hot pizza and then the cold ricotta dolloped on top and then the cold slice of mortadella. And I'm always a big fan of temperature variations in a dish, like a cold salad with a hot something on top. When I worked at Bestia, one of my favorite dishes there was the chicken gizzards with the endive and beet salad. And that was like the epitome of texture and a bunch of stuff. But that was always one of my favorite dishes. It's just like the hot and the cold. And I think that mortadella slice is that same thing where it's super hot slice, cold ricotta that kind of like cools the temperature of the pizza so you're able to eat it. And then the just meaty, fatty mortadella on top.
That's so amazing. You know, I had that gizzard dish the other week, and I can absolutely now see the parallels between the two of them. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Shin, Melissa, congratulations on Shin's Pizza. Thank you so much for sharing so many stories and all the beautiful sentiments between each other. It's been a pleasure to have you on. If people want to stop by the restaurant or follow along online, where can they go? How can they get a slice and maybe make this place a part of their family tradition?
So we're located at 1215 and a half Cypress Avenue in Cypress Park in East LA. You can visit us online at shinspizza.com and order directly from us. We sell slices online and whole pies and all our great sides, as well as Italian ice too. So you can get everything on our menu online. I'm obviously like honored to be doing this with Shin, and it's, you know, having a pizza shop is not, it's the hardest restaurant I've ever worked in. But, you know, to be able to hopefully create memories and rituals for people is going to be the most rewarding thing all at the same time. So.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Well, thank you both. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network.
Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Alex Rose, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you for having me.
Long time friend and hanger out at parties, first time guest.
Yeah.
I think our friendship is, you know, when people are just like, oh, how'd you meet them? And you're just like, kind of like, you're like, oh, around.
Well, it's like, well, like, we literally met around.
I had another friend a few years back that Jess Rotter, who used to be a Mexican Summer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now it's Latin Attic. Sure. That. We ran into each other so much that we were both convinced that we had each other's phone number and we had obviously texted each other to meet up. And then I was like, oh, hey, I'll call you. Then I had to get her number from somebody. I was like, this is, and I feel like with you through Ben and Maggie.
Yeah, absolutely. Through Ben and Maggie.
And then there was like that one week where like three nights in a row and I was like, we should just like, let's just call this a friendship.
Yeah.
Let's just,
I think we're friends now. When we exchanged phone numbers, I think that was the real just like,
oh, I still don't have your phone number. You can get it from me.
Okay.
But I mean, exchanging friend phone numbers is still, I don't know, can I get your number?
I don't know. It's so dorky, especially because it's like, I don't know, because we like already had this like existing like foundation of friendship.
Yeah.
Then to sort of interrupt that and be like, yo, dog.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to intentionally hang out with you sometime. Is that cool?
Yeah. Is that okay? Because that, or it's like someone you see a bunch in like 6 months and you're like, fuck. What's your name again?
Oh, my God, yeah. I know. God, that's the worst.
It's like,
I feel like
hey.
That happened to me last night, like, four or five times. It's just like, oh, hey, I've hung out with you, like, at least half a dozen times. I have no idea who you're now.
Yeah. Besides being a new friend and totally rad and playing music, you have a good history, including radio, which is awesome.
This is true.
Let's talk about the show.
About Domino Records on Eastfield Radio. So the format was basically like, you know, obviously I played some new Domino releases and as well as from the Domino publishing catalog, which is pretty diverse. So I played, you know, a mix of indie rock and new shit that I really liked. It was kind of all over the place. It was
that
like a
new
bit
new?
Schizophrenic.
Not that old.
Not that. I played that new and that old
okay.
interchangeably. Like, I'd play, like, Amon Duel 2, like, then, you know, fucking Blood Orange or
they
whatever.
They have that deep, deep catalog.
They do have a deep catalog. I knew that I was forever maybe in the good graces of Jeff Conklin, who was a great institution at that radio station, when he came downstairs from the office and was like, are you playing Amon Duel? And it was just like made his day. He was like, I did not expect to hear that at 10 a.m. on a Monday morning. Like,
which is great because you know when you like get like the GM or the running station who hears music all the time.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm going to get up and go talk to.
Like that music, that station was just on 24/7 in that office. And the fact like it was very special. And before that, you know, I had a show. I had a radio show in college as well. One time I had zero listeners. It was I could see the listener. I could see the traffic.
Just dropping.
Just, I'm like, man, I really shouldn't have played that like UK subs song or like whatever I played. But yeah, so I did a world music and post-punk show in college.
Oh, amazing.
And that was really fun.
The only listeners that I was 100% sure I had were like the dads of students when I had a college radio show. This guy Bud would call every couple of weeks. He was like his son ended up taking over my room when I moved out of my house. But like I knew for sure that I had like the dad population cornered.
And which radio station was that?
It was KWVA. Okay. I had the new. I had the new.
It
new,
was so new.
It was so. It was like if it had been out for like 3 weeks, it was like old.
Were you like we were like tracking for the for CMJ and stuff like that?
Tracking for CMJ, and then also just like it was. I happened to be there like at the rise of blogs. That's when I was on. So like any demo that someone coughed out would just make it. It's like yeah, we got like a 56. Kilobyte rip, and I was like, that is great. We will put that on the air, and we will,
awesome.
Yeah, we would like rip songs from MySpace players to play.
Amazing.
Yeah, so.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit that would not fly now
ripped
at all.
So many MP3s to play on the radio.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people do use Spotify and like other streaming services to DJ, and it, you can really tell the difference. You know, like
you
what
can.
If the internet? What if the internet would? Well, I guess this is an internet station, so if the internet went down, we'd be fucked. But
yeah, I mean, there's a new that new streaming service that's coming. That's gonna. That's like they're all the tracks are like FLAC files, and it's like $20 a month.
Interesting.
So you know, pick up your. They're flat. It's like uncompressed. No, like you don't lose any audio.
Lossless. They're gigantic files.
Yeah. Which is crazy that they're doing it streaming. So like, I'm not really sure how.
How is that? Wow. Yeah. How's that going to work? That's amazing.
You need you need one of those college T1 connections.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear a song.
Yeah.
Okay.
Forget,
sure.
Forget compression. Let's hear it live.
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us?
Oh, what am I going to play? I don't think this song has a name. You know, some further background, I don't actually play shows or have any
recordings.
Which
is why this is so great.
So this is very special for me. I, you know, used to play the coffee shop circle in Seattle, which is very embarrassing. I can't believe I just said that out loud. So this is actually the first time I've played, like, just me and a guitar. Maybe in six years.
Well, I mean, your biggest downfall is that you talk about it in your Instagram profile.
I will tell you, despite the fact that I don't play publicly, I spend probably an hour, you know, 30 minutes to an hour every day singing and playing guitar. It's just like part of my life.
I think you really downplayed it because you're like, oh, I don't know. And that opening song was great. So
yeah, I don't know why I wrote a song in French. It like came. I was drunk walking home from a bar, maybe like three or four weeks ago. Oh yeah, all of these are very new. I don't know.
This is the new.
It's the new. I come from that like jazz improvisation mindset where I'm like, if you can't play it right the first time, why play it at all?
Okay. All right, so let's get...
Okay.
Well, let's call this track number one.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually 2 weeks in a row where we have unnamed new stuff that's, like, just not named, so...
That new. Oh, it's really loud. I'm sorry, Liz. I'm going to turn this down a little bit. Okay. That suits me better. Is it too late now to change your mind? Do we have to go back inside? In this grand garden, there's no more malaise. So you come outside and pay me mine. And I will see what m'lady thinks, if she might call on me tonight. She is out of sight, you know I'm right. She is luxuries, she is dreamy things. She's a lady in the high castle, whose empire never ended. And I feel alive, inspired by some mad god. And I will arrive if she calls on me tonight. She calls on me tonight.
Great. What was it like in the Seattle coffee house circuit? And what year was it?
God. This was like 2007.
Great.
You know, pretty bleak. Lots of people tamping espresso drinks and...
Trying to think of the Seattle bands. The Blood Brothers. Have you ever heard of them?
Wait.
I'm going to see them.
Who is it?
I know they're doing that massive reunion.
Yes. I'm so excited.
I have tickets.
We saw them at FYF, and they were incredible. I mean, like they I mean, when we saw them, they played. I went to school in the Northwest, and they played all the time. They actually did my radio show in college.
Wait, where did you go to school again?
University of Oregon.
Okay. Yeah. I went to the University of Washington.
Damn. Get the fuck out of the station.
Damn.
They came on the radio show and they were dicks.
They came here?
Oh. No. When I was in college, I was so excited and they were just dicks. And from like the first like 10 seconds, I was like, this is a terrible idea. By the way, so 2007.
Yeah.
What was the, any contemporaries?
I'm trying to think. I mean, this was sort of around the same time as, Tiny Vipers. I guess was kicking around. She was a solo girl. Contemporaries. I don't think any like big names really rose out of that. But sure, like, yeah, Tiny Vipers was, you know, she was signed to Sub Pop and put out some records and had a pretty small following, and I really liked her music. So I guess it was kind of like that. It was just like me and an acoustic guitar. The songs were very different. I mean, not that these are like very mature, but they were very adolescent and bratty.
Yeah. What was like a topic?
I feel like I was always like trying to come up with like clever ways to basically be like, I'm stoned, but like in a clever way, and like sing about it and be like, oh, like I'm like, I think, oh God, I can't even believe I'm talking about this. I think I wrote a song that was like, I arrive red eyed but ready.
Wow.
Why? Like, wow. No. Just no. Yeah. I just look back on that. I actually don't even really remember most of those songs. I've probably written, you know, in my mind, maybe like 40 songs. And I only kind of remember the ones I've written recently.
What was your knit cap game like?
My knit cap?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I did. I had like a frumpy girl hat for sure. It was
frumpy
great.
Girl hat?
That's what my friend Luke calls them. Frumpy girl hat. I never thought about it, but I guess they are kind of frumpy. Like, they're not, like, great. They were, you know, like, those ones that sort of sit farther, a little farther back in your
forehead.
Oh,
I lived in the Northwest. You don't need to tell me about the frumpy girl hat. I was just kind of seeing if you subscribed.
It was great for the weather, though.
Yeah. It's like, oh, just throw this on.
Yeah.
If it gets a little wet, it's okay. It's, like, not that expensive.
Exactly. Yeah. And then your hair's kind of dry.
Yeah,
you get to wherever you're going.
Yeah,
dry enough.
Yeah, dry enough. The Northwest motto. Yeah,
it's dry
enough.
I'm not going to use an umbrella. God, why would I use one of those wonderful human inventions to stay dry?
Saying that you like play 30 minutes to an hour a day, but not really playing. Like, what is the kind of inspiration for it? Or
When I was younger, I used to sing in choirs, and I did musical theater and stuff like that. So I think it's just a way to stay in practice. I sing in bands occasionally. I was a part of Household, which was a Brooklyn band. Played maybe six or seven shows with them earlier this year. So I kind of bop around. I prefer to sing, but I've spent so much time. I feel like it was like after I broke up with my ex-boyfriend like a year and a half ago. I live by myself now, and I'm like, oh, cool. This is like a practice space and an apartment. I'm amazing. Bored. I like pick up a guitar and like.
Don't tell your landlord; they'll charge you more. Oh, yes, it's a practice space and apartment. We can charge you more for that.
Mum's the word.
Yeah.
Greg Flip.
That really is.
Put your earmuffs on. Yeah, wait, that's his name.
Greg Flip?
I definitely thought he was a scammer.
And he's in real estate?
He's in real estate.
So what does he do with apartments?
Well, I'm sure he flips them, rents them.
There we go.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think it's short for Filipovich. Actually, my landlord was in a boy band in, where is his family from? Very small island from... anyway, on the opposite side of the world. I don't want to say Fiji, but where is he? Oh, well, I'm blanking on it. But he was in a boy band, and I looked up pictures on the internet when I Googled him to make sure that he wasn't a fake person.
Yeah.
Flip.
Darren just went through trying to find a new apartment, and
awful.
It was like two bedroom in Williamsburg for $1,000 a month. Just wire me the money, and we'll send you the keys because I don't want to come down from upstate unless the money's not real. And that's like okay.
Sure.
I'm just gonna burn this. I'm just gonna light this on fire and send you a photo of this.
Seriously.
Why don't we get another song?
Sure.
Crank on this is new part two.
Cool.
Thank you.
again, a better. Get going, going nowhere, I better get going. I better going nowhere but home. Alone again. What do you want me to say? I can be anyone I want today. I can go where I please. I can get down on my knees if I want to. 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 So when the lights go down and the curtain falls, I'll be in the box seat, starting the applause, starting the applause, starting the applause. So I better stop going, I better stop going, going nowhere but home, alone again.
So you say Northwest. Are you from Seattle?
No, I'm from Austin, Texas.
Okay. Ooh, what's your favorite place to get Migos?
Ooh, that's a great question. Oh, I have an answer. there's a Migos taco at a window on Manor, East Manor. It's called Taco Mex. It's next to a laundromat.
Okay.
It's the best. It's Migos. Technically, it's Migos, so I cheated and answered with a breakfast taco.
It's fine. Yeah. That's still acceptable.
It's, yeah, it's a good answer.
Cool. What about you?
Polvo's.
Oh, yeah, Polvo's is great.
Favorite, potentially favorite meal in the world?
Absolutely.
Polvo's, cheese, flour, tortillas, black beans.
Really?
Oh, my God, Polvo's is so good.
What do you want from me? I'm a man of simple tastes, you know? I'm just really comfortable with what's going on in my surroundings, and I just need Migos from Austin.
Anyway, I could talk. God, let's just talk about Mexican food for the rest of our lives.
Where's your favorite Mexican food place in Austin?
I agree with you. I think Polvo's may be one of my favorite places.
Boom. See you, Greg.
I mean, I'm not arguing.
What about in Brooklyn?
That's a harder question. Yeah. I don't have an answer. Honestly, it's okay.
I mean, there's, you know, where I wandered by that I haven't been in a while is Mexico 2000.
Where's that?
It's on Broadway. It's in the back of a bodega.
Oh, I've heard about this place.
Which has been around for a while. I don't know if it's, like, good so much as, like, it's cheap and it's, like, in the back at, like, of a bodega and it's
okay.
It's rad. It's next to Trophy Bar. Darren, do you remember? It's something like... Yeah, you
Mexico
took me
2000.
There. Yeah, you took me there.
Still around. It's a bodega. Yeah. It's probably... I wonder if it's good as I remember it.
Yeah, it could be one of those, like, it was good because
we were broke
and it was down the street and, like, just the location about it was great, but I'd be afraid to go back there and it'd be like, oh, it's just not.
Oh, nice. Man. How many things are better in life because it's you're broke and it's down the street? I'm not talking about food.
But
yeah.
Actually, there's a place not far from here where we are. I was trying to remember the name. It's on Flushing and Knickerbocker. They have a great torta.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out to that torta.
Shout out to that torta on the corner.
I think Free Williamsburg did a roundup of, like, the 10 best taco places.
And they only came up with 8?
No. There's a bunch of places. You have to go, like, one or two. It's, like, around these stops that the best, Mexican food is in Williamsburg.
I heard recently that triangle space on Flushing is finally open. Did you hear about this? Mm-mm. The one across from Life Cafe? There's just that property that's a triangle. It's been there forever with, like, an outside space.
Oh, yeah,
Montana's?
Yeah, yeah.
It's open now.
It's apparently. Not Montana's. They did. They opened a bar. I walked by it not too long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, they finally opened something there. That's crazy.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll get a good roundup, like, for Mexican food in the coming... I just think it's impossible to have great Mexican food here, but that's just
it's hard. I'm actually, you know, I like La Superior. Come to think of it, their new restaurant, I think it's called
Cerveceria. Yeah, that's the one I was going to mention.
Oh, that's really good.
So
been there twice lately. Good deal, good prices.
It's good prices. Yeah. Like, they have good drinks, good beers. It's all, like, imported beers from Mexico and. Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I live across from Loco Burrito in on the Graham stop, so I can walk over there in my pajamas and just get a burrito and just go back home.
Close
enough
to change.
Yeah.
I remember when Lissa Pier opened, I used to get in fights with the managers because they serve things traditionally. And they're like, I was like, okay, knife and fork. Like, that's not how it's eaten. And from where, like, from Mexico. And we're like, oh, I know, but I'm in the States. And we would get into, like, epic fights with them of their, like, toe the line, like, just you need to eat it this way. And I was like, I'm a messy eater. Can I just have a, can I have a knife and fork? So, but they're great. And their foods are awesome. We want to make sure we get time for one more song, but since you're not playing out that much, where how could people potentially find you when you do like hop on
Cameo
like,
Friday nights,
secret vocals or guest shows or side with certain John Chavez?
I do. I have a project called West Wing, and I'm mentioning it here so that it sounds more real.
Based on the show?
Neither of us have ever seen the television show.
All right, perfect.
Well, is winter coming? Because
winter is coming.
Get those first four seasons. It's perfect.
Winter is coming, and that's when we will have band practice again.
Cool.
But, yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been really fun.
Yeah.
This is really chill. We're just, like, eating pizza and hanging out in the back of Roberta's. It's awesome.
Yeah, today is, like, a good buddies type snacky tunes.
Yeah, shout out to Jay Strell, who's been our silent guy in the corner.
Yeah, I can't wait to drink this. Jay brought us homemade Negroni?
Bottled. Aged.
Barrel-aged Negroni.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, experimented with those.
The original Negroni recipe.
That's awesome.
Can dig it.
Nicely bottled.
And then next week, I'll be gone for a little bit.
I got to see who's on.
But we have Toy Cities on next week, which will be awesome. And Psychic Twin the following week, which will be great.
Psychic Twin will be a cameo as well.
Oh. She's...
That's with Black Kids. As
oh, right. Oh. Yeah. Look at that.
Look at that full circle.
She's great. Well, okay. We'll be out and... just want to say super excited for the Flyers tomorrow at the Garden.
This is maybe the year.
Oh, man. And it's fall. I guess it was fall during last week's show.
Yeah.
It was really, not that you would know, but happy fall.
No, it's all reversing. It's summer right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Cameo. I'll be there Friday night at 11:59 when the doors open for the late night. One more from Alex Rose. Take it away.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, this is also, I wrote this last week.
New part three.
Yeah. So it's kind of, I mean, all my songs are kind of rough and demo-y. See, this capo is amazing. Okay. I'm flesh. I'm business. Touch me, I am sick. I am strong. I am lustful in this abyss. I'm neither formed, I am not full. I'm a great divide, all is amiss. So kiss me, baby, while I'm wild and free. Tell me, Judas, are you my priest? Kiss me, baby, while I'm wild and free. And tell me, Judas, are you my priest? Open my mouth to impurities. Open my throat, let in the bees, so they can buzz and busy me. And kiss me, baby, while I'm wild and free. And tell me, Judas, are you my priest? Just kiss me, baby. Kiss me, baby. Kiss me, baby, while I'm wild and free.
We talk about food. We talk about music. With musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky tunes.
Snacky Tunes is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.
Subscribe.